to start with, we had some really great questions from everybody, and I know we're probably not going to get to all of them. I'm sure we're going to try and do something to make sure that the questions get to the panelists and stuff. But the first question we've got is kind of multi-part because there were several questions that were asked that are in the same kind of vein, so we've kind of tried to group those together. And this one is, the community is angry about the response to peaceful protests downtown. What would you say is the next step to rebuilding community trust, as well as, you know, what is the desired time frame? And this is kind of open to everybody. Want to take turns?
I think that as a city, we are working towards hearing our constituents and hearing the rage and the anger to the response to the protests, hence why we have the Commission on Police Reform and Racial Justice. I think that's where it starts. We have to be able to listen with our friend ears, as my friend would say to me. We all have to have the capacity to listen to our friend, listen with our friend ears, and understand where there's area of improvement. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. Our police department isn't perfect. But how do we reach that happy medium? How do we make sure that our police officers are being safe, that our constituents are being safe as well? So I think we're on the right track and listening and learning. Right now in the commission, we are learning. We're learning what it takes to be a police officer. We're learning about the trainings that they go through. We've had concerned citizens come in and speak to us about that. I'm not saying that the commission will have the answers to everything because we didn't get here overnight. So we're not going to get the resolve overnight, but I believe that we're working together collectively to try to answer the concerns of our community. And I think that is very important that I know that community policing has morphed, but I believe that's something that we should be really looking at again. I really feel like when I was growing up, having your police officer live in the same neighborhood that they police, I know that there's pushback from police officers about having that as a requirement to work for the police department because it is a stressful job. Sometimes it's hard to create that barrier if you're living in the community that you're serving. But we have to find a way to bridge that gap of divide that we're experiencing between some police officers and some communities. So I think it's first starting listening and learning and working together collectively to find the answers and the resolve. I don't think that it should all be on the shoulders of the police department, and it shouldn't all be on the shoulders of the constituents. We have to work together to make those changes that we want to see. And you had mentioned a few different subject matters in reference to abandoned buildings and how things are being developed. That falls on the shoulder of your council people. I feel that we have a council now that's making the attempt to work together collectively to help to grow and develop and help Southeast to continue to be a viable community. So the police can't do it all. Their number one priority is to protect and serve, but they are the eyes of the community, and they can be very helpful. That's why they sit on panels when we're talking about development. So there's a lot of things that we as public servants have to do to serve our constituents. So we are, as a council, working collectively. I know Councilwoman Sharon Tucker has a lot of things in the pipeline and having a lot of conversations about developing those effective developments. We are working with a lot of different nonprofits who are creating Impact Southeast. Again, we're limited in resources, but that's not an excuse, that's just an acknowledgement. But we do have people that are collectively working together to bring that impactful programming Southeast.
It's already been said that language is really important, right? The use of words is really important. So what I'm seeing around the country, and I'll talk about Seattle and Portland, they wanted to take away all less lethal munitions from law enforcement officers. So no tasers, no chemical agent, no batons. They wanted to leave them with their fist and they want to leave them with their firearm. Folks, I can tell you less lethal munitions are the lesser of a whole lot of very bad outcomes. I've been there. I've been involved in a situation where a person lost their life in my presence. I've been shot at. I know that had I not had those other options, things could have ended very, very badly. And so just as we've passed an ordinance that all of our officers are going to be wearing body cameras, I know you all are like, that's awesome. Well, I can tell you as a police officer, one of the things that would have went through my mind is where the heck am I going to put one more piece of equipment on my 26-inch waist, that was back in the day, y'all, Where am I going to put one more piece of equipment? I'm already carrying 40 pounds on my hips. 40 pounds. I'm just telling you, you try running with 40 pounds on your body. You try sitting in a car with 40 extra pounds on your body. Your officers, their bodies are taking a beating because of all the equipment they have to carry to keep you all safe and to keep themselves safe. So before you make a really quick decision about what you think is best for our officers, everybody has to understand and do the research. We can't just have a knee-jerk reaction because of something that's happened in another city. We got to do our study to be able to know that that's the best thing for everyone.
I actually agree with that. We can't go based on what happened in other cities and put it on the heart of our own city. That's where the narrative gets a little bit twisted because you forget what you're fighting for. So to answer the question on how to come to a common ground and an understanding between officers and protesters, and what can we do to start bridging that gap together? It's going to start for the community, for the protesters. It's honestly with Baylen Blake. Baylen Blake. I say that because we were hurt. You know, some of us were, this man lost an eye. I was there when it happened. Okay? I saw it when it happened. It was very scary. I don't know what anybody has heard, but based on personal experience, he did not pick up a canister, and he did not try to throw that canister back. The canister may have, I don't know how they work. Maybe it went off too early, or maybe it was a defect in it, or it doesn't matter what was wrong with it, but this man lost his eye. So again, do we not trust the police? It's not what it is. It's why hasn't this been held accountable? Why has nothing really been said or done? Or why are we being considered? Why are we considered the liars? Why are we considered, I mean, everything but a child of God right now? Because we stood up for ourselves. Do I want that bridge to be gapped? Yes. You know, Floyd happened, and next thing you know, the whole country went crazy. And we lost ourselves. I can admit that. We did. But it's out of anger and it's out of tiredness of something that's repetitive and repetitive and repetitive, and nothing is being done. So let's exit out everything that happened everywhere else, and let's concentrate on what happened here. Baylen Blake lost his eye. I don't know what officer shot the canister. I don't know if it was a floor canister or if it came out of a gun, but I know this young man lost his eye. So if we want to start bridging that gap, that needs recognition and real recognition. I'm not saying an apology. I'm not saying fire the officer. I have no control over that. All I can say is speak. All I can do is speak my mind. But if that is recognized and not ignored, and we can, and somebody actually sits and talk to that man, talk to him and see how he feel, where he's coming from, because he sacrificed an eye over what, tear gas and rubber bullets. When we could have went home, unfortunately, we weren't allowed to go home. I'm sorry. We weren't. I tried. I had to go pick up my daughter from a birthday party, and they would not let us leave, even after telling us to leave. So we tried to leave, only to be baited right back in the same area that we tried to get away from. And next thing you know, we get tear gas, and this young man lost his eye. So if we want to bridge that gap, we want to start somewhere, we got to start with holding somebody accountable for what happened to Baylen Blake.
So if anything's come from what's happening this season, it's the public's right to know the records and disciplined histories of our police officers. So when can the police make public the records of the most disciplined police officers in Fort Wayne?
I think the media prints those every single time an officer gets in trouble. So everything an officer does on their discipline record is public information, and I think the Journal Gazette does a really good job of posting everything when there's something to post. So I would look to the Journal if you're going to look up anybody. And if it's not in there, then they haven't done anything because they post everything.
And so what are the procedures for recruiting officers?
We try to be creative. I have actually spoke from the pulpit at many churches on a Sunday. We go to the SROs. One of the things that we talked about earlier with them in middle school, we start talking to kids then about this as a possible job avenue, because one of our standards is you can't have smoked, and correct me if I'm wrong, weed within the last 5 years. It's lower now? Yeah. Okay, but you still, there's a time frame. So let's just say you went off to college, because you can't be an officer till you're 21, and you smoked weed in college, well, now you got to wait 2, 3, 4, 5 years before
you... I think it's a year now. I'd have to double check, but times are a-changing.
Times are a-changing. And it used to be that when I first came on, you couldn't have any hard drugs in any experience with it, and now that's been lowered as well. So as far as recruitment goes, we will talk to anyone and everyone, and even individuals who have a prior criminal history. There are certain things you can have expunged, and there are ways in which, if that is truly your life goal, maybe it isn't law enforcement, but I bet you make a heck of a probation officer or parole officer or some other criminal justice related field. And that's my message to you, is just, they told you no once, don't mean that it's no completely. Times change, standards change. You continue to let yourself be known that that's what you want to do. So recruitment wise, all I can tell you is we put billboards out, there's public service announcements. When back in the day, we would have 800 to 1,200 people apply for 20-some openings. Now, we will have, if we're lucky, 400 people apply for those same positions. And then there is literally, it is 6 to 8 months process, and people get cut along the way. And I will tell you this, maybe we need to look at some of our physical fitness standards too, because I don't know that all that is really necessary to police well in community policing in our communities. So some of those standards haven't changed much, and the standards are not different for male or female officers.
And I'll add to that, we, over the last few years, we have sent officers to predominantly black colleges to seek minority candidates, military bases for those getting out of the military. We've sought those as well. The last process we saw, I want to say it was about 435 applicants that actually signed applications. 200 of those actually showed up for the test. 78 were African Americans. That had put in, but only 23 African Americans showed up to actually take the test. So, you know, we tell them to check their junk mail, we tell them to check their emails, and that's how we send notice of the test out. But you can't start the process if you don't take the test. So, you know, some of this has to be on some people's own responsibility for getting to that and taking that test. We have testing help available as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think one of my ideas was to have a public safety day where we go out, we set up shop, we run a mock fit test so people can run through that. We coach them on how to take a test, how to do an interview. I sat on the last interview board and I was shocked how many young people just don't know how to interview. They don't know what to wear to an interview. You know, run a lint brush over, comb your hair, brush your teeth. I mean, these are standards I hear people chuckle, but it's true. And if you don't have someone in your life that knows that and can share that with you, you're kind of stuck. So if we can be of service in that area and we can help people and show them what we want, I think we'll get better applicants, we'll get better people through the process. So that was my ideas. Of course, COVID shut everything down. So we're still, but it just gives us time to hone in those kinds of things that we want to do in the community to help people get and make it onto the department. I just think, you know, we welcome any ideas. If anybody has any ideas for recruiting, we welcome those ideas as well.
Actually, I was just thinking, so I have a question in addition to this question. So for the recruitment, if someone's already been an offender and they've served their time and everything, is it possible for them to become an officer afterwards? And is there any sort of recruitment for that? And then the other question is also, how can we get community support when so many law enforcement don't necessarily live in our community?
to the first question, yes, you can, depending on the crime. I mean, obviously, there's some things that we just can't take. But for majority of the lesser offenses, misdemeanor offenses, Dottie's right. You can get them expunged. It's not expensive to do. It goes off your record. I mean, we'll still see it, but we know you've made an effort to do those kinds of things. And it matters, right? And I like to tell people, every choice you make matters. So if you don't think at 20 your choices matter when you're 40, you're wrong. It matters no matter where you are in life, no matter what job you're at. You don't want to become a politician. What you did in high school and college is going to matter, right? And to some extent, it should matter. It defines your character and who you are. And if you're constantly making the same repeated mistakes over and over and over, you know, our society, our community has a standard of what they expect our officers to be. So, you know, the standard drives who we hire. So if the community wants us to lower the standards, then I think the community speaks out and then we may do that. But don't be surprised if the quality of officer also lowers at that point too. Not saying everybody, there could be some really good candidates that have made mistakes or have grown out of things. I'm a firm believer in second chances like Dottie as well. But there has to be a limit, I think, at least for me, on how many chances people get. I mean, some people just have to get that they have to start making good choices. For the second question, a majority of our officers do live here in town or in the county. There are a few that do live in outlying counties. You can live one county away from where you work, but you can't live any further. But a majority of our officers do live here. I mean, I don't know the breakdown of how many don't. And as to living or working where you live, that's really hard. You know, people stop by my house all the time. I just need a day off. You know, I don't want to police on a Sunday when I'm with my kids. Unfortunately, that squad car sits in my driveway. I mean, it's, you know, and people know where I live and they stop by. They ask me to do stuff. I'm like, I don't come to you and ask you to make me a sandwich if you work at Subway on a Sunday when you're not working. So I'm not that I don't want to help you. I try to answer questions, but sometimes I just want to be with my family. So it's really hard. And then, you know, when you have to make arrests in those neighborhoods, then people, you know, get mad at you and they do stuff to your house. And so it's really hard to kind of live in the areas where you actually patrol in a realistic world. I mean, it'd be nice if we all had to live, you know, where we patrol. But then we're so obviously we move around too. I might not always patrol Southeast. That doesn't mean I'm going to pick up and move to my new neighborhood because I move districts. So it's just really hard because we move people all the time. So there's my answer to that question.
So how do we talk to each other without all the anger and disrespect? How can we talk and share knowledge and love, especially with all the fear?
I think this is a really good start tonight. But why aren't we having these conversations in our churches? Why aren't we having these conversations, you know, at our board meetings, at our different companies? Because if you're paying taxes here, this is a conversation you should be involved in. And I think that people are angry. I think people are really hurt. And I don't think that COVID has helped much. And so I think even more so, we have to be better listeners. I'm from a very diverse family. I have, there were 10 of us growing up, and I can tell you that we don't talk politics and we don't talk religion because somebody's going to get ugly in my household. And I've just told my brothers and sisters, look, when we get together, we have to be civil to one another and we have to agree to disagree. We don't have to all have the exact same viewpoint and we're not always right. I am a lifelong learner and I learn a lot by listening. I learn a lot by watching people. It really bothers me that you all have masks on because I love it when I can read your faces and know that you're disagreeing with me and I can't see that right now. But we have to be willing to have these conversations. When someone disagrees, we have to say, I can tell you're uncomfortable with what I said. Can we talk about it? And we also have to be willing to step up to the plate and join some of these task forces and some of these committees, because it is tough work. It is not easy work at all. But if you want to be part of the solution, then come to the table.
And just to add to what you just said, I always had that philosophy. You're standing on the sideline, just talking and not, you know, creating impact. And you're just not being about what you want to be, the change you want to see. Then sit down and be quiet. We need people to come to the table that are willing to listen and receive what's being said. And I always say, try to find that happy medium. We got to find a way to meet in the middle. And it starts with like civil conversations. So we definitely need to have more of these in the community, churches, people's homes, fireside chats, but we have to start talking to one another because we have a lot of people who want to understand how we got here. No, Fort Wayne may not be experiencing some of the issues that the larger cities have experienced, but we do have issues. If you're listening to our young people, this young lady right here and others, you know, we have things that we can adjust and change and improve in. You know, we have systematic systems that have been in place for a very long time that need to adjust with the times. But again, it does start with civil conversations. And you're knowing that you're having conversations where you're working for solutions. You can talk and talk and talk, but we should be striving for solutions and resolve to the issues that we're trying to deal with.
You will never find a solution on social media. So just stop. You're not going to win an argument on social media. People just like to be mean and rude, and they'd never say that to you in public. But you'll never find that in social media. So stop with the social media. Get to the table where we are. Find one of us. Get engaged in your community. Be a big brother, big sister. Be a mentor. Be a tutor. You know, Weiser Park's always looking for Tutor McMillan Park. You know, I know you spoke about, you know, not having certain things in your areas where you are. And I know that there is talk about satellite boys and girls clubs in those areas. They're just trying to make sure it's safe. And what that means is we need the community to step up and make sure those areas are safe for our kids to go there. They cannot be broken into. The stuff can't be stolen from there. There can't be violence around those kids because they're ultimately responsible for those kids. So we need community members in those communities to make sure that those places are safe places to go for kids so they can have a little bit of safety where they are, for if, even if it's just for the 2 hours that they're there before they go home to another unsafe place.
As far as communication goes, I feel like we're leading by example right now. We're dialoguing. We might not agree on everything, but we can agree that we're all in it for the same thing. So what I tell my daughter is that it's okay to disagree, but the most education that you get is by word of mouth. That's literally the most education that you obtain is by word of mouth. So what I do is I sit back and I actually allow for a person to talk to me first. That way I'm getting an understanding of your mood. I'm getting an understanding of what you understand. I'm getting an understanding of how you feel. And wordplay comes into that a lot too when you're dialoguing back and forth with each other. So the first thing would be is to go home. Figure out yourself. Figure out how you truly feel and where you stand. And once you do that, you know you can't be moved in where you stand, no matter what anybody says. That makes it easier for you to disagree with a person without being confrontational. You know they're not going to change your mind, but you can understand and respect their opinion. Then from there, you have these conversations with your children. And we know they're the future. They watch us communicate. So if we're arguing back and forth with one another, and not sitting down and having these conversations respectfully amongst each other, then they're going to do this at school. And they're not going to be able to talk to each other. Then that's when they're going to lead to violence. And they're going to, they lose friends or whatever case may be. Communication starts in the home. And we teach each other how to talk to each other. Me and my daughter are very respectful to each other. You know, I sit down and she's 5 years old, but she understands very, very well. And I learn from her every solitary day. And that comes from listening. So those of us who are parents, we all know the key is to just sometimes we just got to listen. You know, we've been there. We've done that. We've seen it. We'd heard it. But now it's time to steer them in the right direction. So thank you for that. I did not know that. You know, I appreciate all the conversation that we're having. I'm learning. So once you let people know that you're not there to bash them or criticize them, or belittle them, or make them feel like they are wrong, once you have that conversation, you never know who mind you're going to change or which direction you're going to steer them in. So we have to be careful with that. But if your mind and your heart is positive and pure and your message is clear, then we all know that we love each other and we can move forward on a solution.
I got to follow up with what you said there, Minnie. And I would just like to ask you directly, what do you think that we can do to get more young people involved?
I've asked myself that same question. I've been trying to ponder on how to appeal to the younger crowd. Right now, it seems to be music. And I don't rap and I don't sing. So what we're doing right now, we're all sitting here and we're talking. Keep the conversation going. If we keep this conversation going and we get out here and we take the time to talk to them, like I said, go to the school and figure out what they want. School's about to start, right? Let's get some polls. They love Facebook. Let's get something started to where we can figure out where they stand and what it is that they want. A lot of them want to be a part of a movement or a change, but they don't understand what they're fighting for. And because they don't understand what they're fighting for, it's making them angry at us. And they think we're against them. That comes in a part of listening to them. So what I think the first step should be is compiling data. Let's figure out where they stand. Once we figure out where they stand, let's start having these personal conversations with them. Let's find out their educational level. Let's find out their understanding level. Like I ask myself every day, am I going to make it home? What can I do today differently? Let's start asking them questions like that. What can you do today that's different? What can you change about yourself today that can impact and be powerful later on in your future? Let's start there. Let's start, like I said, with the police officer. She said they go out and they play basketball. I don't see it often, but it does happen. I know that. That's a good way to start as a community. Let's get out there and talk to them. If we show that we're scared of them, then who do they have? Well, we can't go talk to this person because they're scared of me, so, hey, I might as well talk to the person who thinks just like I do. We don't want that because when they think like each other and it's negatively, they're going to keep being negative. So let's redirect that into positivity. And that's why I said, why not open up something as far as where they can get their creativity out? A lot of these children, they rap, they sing, they do poetry. They're artists. A lot of these murals down here that you guys have seen have come from these young teenagers and young adults. Let's encourage that. Let's educate that. Let's build on that. Let's find people like Mr. Curry, who provides a STEP program to install discipline on them. Let's encourage these type of programs. Is if they know that we're there for them and we can start showing them that we're there for them, then they're going to start trusting us. And then they're going to start trusting that they have a future. And then they're going to start trusting that they don't have to live a particular lifestyle in order to keep living. And they can have peace and a peace of mind. We have to steer the narrative from the direction in which it has been, which has been a negative one, and steer it in a positive direction by caring about them first. Because, again, we're gone. They're going to be the ones that's here. And if we don't stop it now, if we don't do something about it now, it's going to continue to get worse and worse and worse. So let's just stop ignoring it. Create opportunities and programs.
Thank you very much. Thank you everyone for attending. We're getting close to the end of our time. So if the panelists would like to share one last comment, Minnie, I know you just got done speaking. Would you like to share your last comment or would you like to wait? Okay. Councilwoman Tucker?
Chambers. the other wonderful councilwoman. I can see how you get as confused, but just know that we are working diligently to listen to the community. We are working, trying to hear the community. We have some recommendations that are on the table right now that we're working through that hopefully we can get to the community before the year is over. So as your councilwoman, I am working with our constituents. I am listening. I am learning from our Fort Wayne Police Department. And I think that's the most important thing, learning, listening, and looking for solutions. And just thank you to our host for this very difficult conversation, but a conversation that we should have again and again and again until we don't need to have it anymore. So thank you for being here.
I think we need to be in it for the long haul. This isn't an easy fix. There are maybe 100 people here, and we're a much larger city than that. I look out and I don't see this as being a very well represented, as far as, you know, the minority community has a lot of concern, and there are very few minorities that are here tonight that are willing to either talk about the issue or fear that they're not going to be heard. And we're right, or she's right. We've got to somehow let people know that we are inclusive in our conversation and that their voices matter. So system change is not going to happen overnight, but you have to be dedicated to making some tough decisions and doing the work to get it done. And Sophia, you know, she's a long-term police officer, and with every new policy and procedure that comes out, I can tell you there are officers that are not happy, and it's going to take them time to adjust as well. So we have to be patient with one another, and we have to be good neighbors, if I can use that word. Good neighbors. We have to be willing to help each other get through this.
I just want to say representing the Fort Wayne Police Department has always been kind of the highlight. I love my job. I love what I do. I know there's 400 and I won't say 75, but close, officers who love their jobs too. You know, there's always a few in there that probably should find other employment, and, you know, we try as we might to get them out, but sometimes it's not that easy. But I want you to know that most officers want to do better. They want to feel like they're being listened to, being heard as well, because we all just want to be respected, right? We all just want to have those conversations. We all just want someone to hear us, we want the same. But we need to be invited. I mean, I can't know everything that goes on in every event, neighborhood association that goes on, that wants to party, that wants an officer there. On our webpage, we have an Ask an Officer to Come to Your Event page, so you can fill out the information. We will try, and we do a really good job at getting an officer or two or three there to your event, to your picnic, to your neighborhood party, to your church, to have these kind of talks. We're willing to have these kind of talks. We don't mind tough questions. I will talk about anything I can legally with anyone who will listen. And I can talk all day long about policing and this job in this community and what we do. But we have to have people willing to invite us. My community relations team is a team of three. It's myself, Officer Lisa Woods, and Captain Mitch McKinney, and we are a force to be reckoned with. We will make almost every event. We'd like to have different opportunities to get out into the community and meet people where they are. We're not here to tell you your emotions aren't valid, what you feel isn't valid, but we will also present you with facts of what is correct and what actually happened. We deal a lot with a lot of people's emotions and how they view certain scenarios, but that doesn't always mean that that's the truth. And it doesn't mean that they're being, they're falsifying anything. That's just where they see it, and that's just how they feel. And we're not here to negate those feelings, but we are going to correct those things. And I think we did that the other day during our commission meeting. We presented facts to refute what someone had said about our officers, and not to take that away from her, because we know that's where she is emotionally in that traumatic situation, but we wanted the citizens to know that our officers did what they needed to do in a timely manner. But invite us. Our office is always available, and together we can have more of these talks. We'll come and talk to anybody. We're not afraid of anyone, and no one needs to be afraid of us. We're three of the nicest officers you'll meet. I do way better over some beer or something after hours, but we're here for you, and a majority of our officers are as well, so we thank you for the opportunity to serve you.
I think we finally, in my eyes, got somewhere. I think that we're finally starting to get on the same page. It's a slow process. It's going to be slow. But I personally want to say thank you for those who did show up to listen. It starts with us. And, you know, maybe we can go home and tell somebody else to show up to the next one. And then they can show up to the next one and go home and tell somebody to show up to the next one. Start a chain. Love is abundant. It's here. You can feel it all around you. Instead of when it's raining outside, try to be somebody's light. You see somebody down, or you see somebody sad, let's steer their mind into a different direction and get them back on the right page of positivity. If we start at home and with those around us, that's really policing your community. That's policing your community. Going home and talking to your grandkids and your children, your children's friends, and, you know, I'm not saying be their friend. Of course, be a parent. But let's help them. I'm definitely going to take you up on a beer in that conversation. And that's how we get these started. That's how we get these started. So I just, my last piece of advice is just take that love that you feel, all that love and power that you hold within yourself, and pass it on to the next person so they can pass it on to the next.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. Special thanks to Avow founders Patty Hayes, Rachel Tobin-Smith, Marilyn Moran Townsend, and Faith Van Gilder for organizing this event. And special thanks to Luke Hollinger for providing audio for this program. Our music is by Mark Waldeck, Noah Campodonico, and Kurt Remke. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our production assistants are Monica Blankenship, Diamond Thomas, and Michaela Veltum. Until next time, thank you for listening. From WBOI Fort Wayne.